And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 30th, 2020. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I am well, and I am particularly enthusiastic to be joined by a special guest today, Stephen Rothstein from Ceres, who will be discussing systemic financial risks of climate. Tune in.
Well, let me introduce Stephen Rothstein is the managing director of the Ceres Accelerator for Sustainable Market Development. That's a lot of words. Ceres is an acronym for we'll let Stephen introduce. Hello, Stephen. How are you doing? Let me introduce you. How are you doing?
I am great. Nice to see both of you.
So tell me, what does the acronym Ceres stand for?
So Ceres has started over 30 years ago. And it started as an acronym in terms of the Coalition of Environmentally Responsible, but now that we don't use it as an acronym anymore. Mm-hmm. And we work with investors and large companies and policymakers and others to have a more sustainable climate and focused on climate issues and water and forestry and other social justice issues.
Interesting.
Yeah. And just to sort of toot your horn a little bit here. Stephen, you have decades of experience working in transforming the practices and policies that govern capital markets, right, to accelerate reduction of the worst financial impacts of the climate crisis. So we've got your true wealth of knowledge on some topics, and we're hoping you will share some of your insight with us today on the program.
Well, that's very kind. When they say someone has a lot of experience, what they really mean is that the person just has made a lot of mistakes over their life. So in that case, I have a lot of experience.
Well, we get to learn from all of the things you've learned in your pathway, which is great. I'd love to take a dive with you into some of what you study. And I guess what does it mean to climate change and why is it concerning? You ready for that?
I am. So
great.
Unfortunately, you don't have to turn on the newspaper or turn on the TV or flip the newspaper or something without seeing the impact, whether it be the fires out west this week, the utility out there turned off the power for about 1 million people. We're having hurricanes, more tornadoes, more floods. So more and more risks are happening all the time. This is also happening, obviously, in the middle of this other nature-based crisis called the pandemic. So climate change doesn't wait for anybody, including other nature-based crises. So it's getting worse. The UN has said we have to take significant and dramatic action by 2030 to ensure that we have a future in a dramatic way. And Ceres has been working on this with our partners, both in business and in the private sector and government.
Yeah, and something you've talked, I've heard you speak a lot about is that climate change is a systemic financial risk. Can you describe why? I mean, absolutely, it's a risk to our planet, and it's a risk to the future of our life here on Earth, right? But a lot of times people say, well, addressing climate change it's just going to tank the economy. You hear that sometimes, or it's very expensive, et cetera, et cetera. But I think you guys speak really eloquently as to why it's a financial risk to not address the climate crisis.
It is. It is a financial risk. And let me divide up the words. So first, the word systemic. So what that means is we're not talking just for a particular company. So we're not talking if you're on the Cape and you're right up by the coast. Yes, it's a risk there. But it also, if you're in the oil business, yes, it's a risk there. But what we're saying is it is a risk no matter where you are in the country and what kind of industry you're in, because it affects all of us. And you don't have to literally look at what's happening now between the fire and the smoke and the soot out west. It just now expanded from California to Colorado and the hurricanes and the other storms. So it is systemic, meaning it's affecting all of us in one way or another. Oh, sorry, Ted. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that maybe you will get to it, but I mean, what's the system? I mean, can you name the system? Because I can imagine there is a farming system that climate change is a risk to. I assume you're coming at it from a financial angle. So when you say the system, a systemic risk, you mean a systemic risk to
the financial
markets,
system,
right? The financial markets, right?
And so you think we want, we believe in the markets, but the markets need to have good information and they need to have access. We know several months ago at the beginning of the pandemic that our supply chains were strained, that people couldn't get product. People were talking about toilet paper, but they couldn't get lots of other things. So now at the housing crisis in 08 and 09, our markets were strained. And if the government hadn't stepped in, our banks would have failed. Well, there's lots of studies that we have that show the risk due to climate is several times more than what the housing crisis could have affected us in 08 and 09. So we're not just saying you should focus on it because it's important for the climate. It is. But it's also important for stability of banks, stability of insurance companies. I'll give you just one example. In the last few months, three oil companies have written off about $40 billion of assets. So those three companies, that's $40 billion that banks won't get repaid, that insurance premiums won't. Now imagine if it's not $40 billion, but what if it's $100 billion or trillion or $4 trillion? And that's what we're potentially talking about. If we don't take action, that there is the financial stability of our markets, of our banks, of our businesses, our insurance companies. So why should everyone care about it? Because everyone, well, 96% of the people in the country have a bank account someplace, and you want your bank to be secure. Almost everyone has insurance, and you want your insurance company to be secure. You may not like everything about what they do, you want them to be secure. And that climate has a potential to cause serious harm or maybe bankrupt institutions, as well as causing enormous climate issues. We also have the potential to have tens of millions of people in the United States called climate migrants, people who won't be able to live where they live now. And it's not just on the ocean. Yes, it is on the ocean and Cape Cod or Boston, it could be affected, but it could be the Midwest because of a drought. It could be other places because of tornadoes. So it is a systemic financial risk for all of us, and we have to care about it because we all have bank accounts and insurance accounts, even if we're not a corporation executive.
I know you don't have a crystal ball, so you couldn't say this exactly, but I'm curious about the timeline on this. I think that some of what makes climate change hard to get people really rallied around in some ways, although of course that's changing and there are plenty of people rallied around it, but it's a long way away, even though now we're seeing it, right? I mean, this is all kind of esoteric here, but the big effects we talk about are in 2050 or, 2030, and those seem far away, although they're getting closer. Is it the same way with the, you said the risk due to climate is seven times more than it was in 2008, the bank risks is seven times more. What is the timeline for that? Is that going to happen soon? Do you think that's going to happen slowly over time?
So the short answer is it depends. It depends on where you are, what industry you're in. So if you're in a fossil fuel industry, not just oil and gas, but a utility or a manufacturing that uses a lot of oil or agriculture that uses a lot of fossil fuel, then the risk is present today, not tomorrow, literally today. This year, I think it's either 10 or 11 times the acreage burned in California that burned last year. We have more named storms than any place else. So it is getting worse every year. And now imagine, when you think back at 08 and 09, we almost had the banking crisis. That started because of a crisis with subprime housing in three states, and then it mushroomed from there. So now imagine, could you imagine that next summer, we're still in a pandemic. Yes, we could imagine that. That we have another fire season, that we have another hurricanes, and that it could be next year we're facing it. I don't think it will. What the UN has said is, overall, if we don't take significant action by 2030, less than 10 years from now, then not the whole world's going to burn up. I'm not saying that, but there'll be parts of the world that will be irreplaceable. And by 2040, there are other parts. So we're saying between now and 2040, that with interim goals along the way, that every business and every country needs to set goals to decarbonize, to use less fossil fuel in their home, in their office, in their school.
So that's sort of the big thrust of it, is that decarbonization is critical. Are there specific things that financial regulators should be doing to move the capital markets in that direction?
So first is, what is a financial regulator? And why do you think, you know, we're talking about the climate. Why do financial regulators even matter? We're not talking about the Environmental Protection Agency. So a financial regulator is a state banking commissioner or a state insurance commissioner or a federal agency like the Federal Reserve Bank or central bank in this country or other many others. So they are state and federal government officials that regulate the security of banks, insurance companies, securities. That's who they are. And what should they do? Their job is to regulate and to make sure there aren't risks. So this past year, the bank regulators went into banks and said, how are you prepared for a pandemic? What if it lasts 2 months? What if it lasts 8 months? What if this? They had different kind of scenarios, different options. They should be doing the same thing for climate. Just as they'll look at management risks, they'll look at different currency risks, they'll look at pandemic risks, now probably more than they did a year ago, and they're not spending enough time looking at climate. So we think that every regulator should first say climate is a significant risk, and they should build it into everything they do, including training bank examiners, talking to banks about it, and looking at insurance. So we're not asking financial regulators to be the APA, we're asking them to regulate the financial institutions, to basically do their job, just like there are financial regulators like central banks in over 60 countries around the world that are doing this. What we're saying, to be honest, there's nothing new in what I'm saying. These are not recommendations that we got from environmentalists. We went to read reports from central bankers and regulators from around the world and just took their best ideas.
So I remember hearing the CEO of Ceres speak a while back, Mindy Lubber, and she, I think it was quite a while ago that she was talking about that a lot of industries are already required to disclose climate risk, but they don't do it because it's not enforced. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So we have a country where we know if we want to buy stock, every stock they have to file financial records, and they have to do it using U.S. currency, and they have to do income statements. They have to do the same. There's mandatory, consistent financial reporting, which allows us to understand, or investors or directors. We have voluntary climate disclosure from the federal, called the Securities and Exchange Commission. So there is a guidance document from 2010 that Ceres was involved with, but it's not mandatory. So what happens is Company A files, and they tell about how much plastic they use. And Company B talks about how much electric vehicles and other things. So they talk about elements, and they're all good. And voluntary disclosure is a step forward, but it's not mandatory. It's not consistent. So one of our recommendations, we wrote an extensive report last June, and we say is that there should be mandatory, consistent climate disclosure by the Securities and Exchange Commission. Think of it as a roadmap. If you want to go someplace, you have to know where you want to go. If you want to reduce the amount of fossil fuel you're using, first you have to know how much you're using today.
Yeah. I would imagine there's a lot of pushback against making that mandatory, right? Because if you are a fossil fuel company, essentially your climate risk disclosure, I'm speculating here, would be if we burn everything in our reserves, would cause such damage to the climate that we can't burn anything in our reserves, right? We have to leave it in the ground. And so that basically they have to say our stocks have no value because we can't burn them.
Well, it's not, I mean, so there are, if you look around the world, I'll just take fossil fuel companies, but there are other industries as well. So there are fossil fuel companies that are diversifying more. So BP, for example, they're buying more solar and wind and other things. I'm not saying they're perfect. They have a lot of other issues. But so, and there are cement companies, one that uses a greener technology, buildings that do more efficiency. So we're not saying there are bad industries, but we're just saying individual companies need to do more to use less fossil fuel, use less carbon. If we really want to literally have a planet for, I don't have grandkids yet, but for kids being born today to be able to survive. But there is pushback on disclosure for some.
Yeah, and I should clarify, I didn't mean the stocks, like the financial stocks, but their oil reserve stocks, like the amount of oil that they have that they're valuing some of their company on. But yeah, that's a great point, is diversifying keeps them valuable in the stock market.
Mariah, can I jump in with a question? Because yeah. I am also confused about climate risk and climate risk to a company. And the example I used, I don't know, 20 years ago, correctly or incorrectly, was Dunkin' Donuts, right? And if the climate warmed and Dunkin' Donuts couldn't get that good smelling coffee anymore, right, then they were out of business. Is that the kind of climate risk you want disclosed, sort of supply chain risks? Or is it is it primarily to do with burning fossil fuels?
No, it's everything.
So could you describe climate risk? I mean, when you say that, what do you mean?
So it's for every company. Every company, we believe every industry, whether you're in real estate or in making donuts or food or any other business, to have a climate disclosure. And it's technical, but in broad brush, it's in three different buckets. First is, okay, what does it take to heat the building you're in and what kind of electricity? And second is, what about the things you buy, the paper you buy, the vehicle, what kind of climate impact? And third is one step removed. So for a bank, who are they lending money to and what's the impact for them? For a farmer, who do they sell their beans to? So it's looking, and all those things can be measured. It's not easy. It's not perfect, but it's a lot better than it was. And we think that every big business, we're not talking about a mom-pa retail store, but every significant size business should do climate disclosure. And there's nothing, we're not talking about anything dramatic. In other words, this is being done in other countries. New Zealand just required it for everyone. Canada some steps, some Europe has. So we're just following the lead of other nations who are saying that climate is a risk that all of us as individuals can play a role, whether we're employees of companies, shareholders, members of a synagogue or a church, and ask those institutions, what are they doing to reduce the fossil fuel? And if we happen to know someone who is a regulator, a bank examiner or something, ask them, are they asking their bank or insurance company, what about this as a big risk? As bad as the pandemic is, and as disruptive as it is to all of our lives and livelihoods, and it's just heartbreaking in every way, someday we're going to have a therapeutic or a vaccine, and it'll get better. I'm not saying it'll go perfect. There's no vaccine for climate change. There's no vaccine for climate change. So unless we make dramatic changes, the only thing we know is it will get worse, and Mother Nature always wins in the end.
That's powerful, powerful words.
One question I have, I'm back on the climate risk idea concept. It seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, the climate risk to a company is to its value, right? It's the risk to the value of the company that climate change represents, right? So if a company buys a whole lot of diesel engines, all of a sudden they're going to find out they can't use them, they've lost money, and they're worth less than they would have been if they bought Tesla electric trucks, just as an example, right? That's the kind of thing you're trying to reveal. So it's not a risk of pollution so much as a risk to the value of the company. You're trying to identify, if you continue in the path you're on in the climate realm, you've got a certain amount of value at risk if you continue that practice. Is that fair?
So it is. So both are relevant. The way we think about it, just take is what is the environmental impact on the bank and what is the bank's impact on the environment? We're focusing on the financial stability of the company, but clearly the environmental impact that company does is critical, and that's very, very important. But when we go to shareholders and investors and regulators, we're saying to them, just focus on the value. I mean, if our banking system almost fell apart in 2008, and the risk then was significant, but not anywhere near as large. There's a lot of studies that show this in terms of climate. Then we should be building this in. And there are literally dozens of countries around the world that are doing this, building in climate considerations when banks think about who they're going to loan money to. Mm-hmm. Or what should the mm-hmm. price be for insurance? Maybe for insurance, if you insure an oil rig, well, maybe the insurance should be a lot more expensive because the risk is more. And maybe mm-hmm. for a bank, again, if you're loaning to two companies and one is a heavy fossil fuel user and one is lower, if everything was equal, a simple example, then maybe you should charge a higher rate because the risk is you may not get that paid back. Or if you're loaning money to a building on a beachfront and it's a 30-year mortgage, well, what if that beachfront isn't there in 30 years? And if that was built into the price, now if it's more expensive, then that next building in the beachfront wouldn't be built because it'd be too expensive.
And essentially we're equating a sort of financial efficiency with sustainability. I say, if you recognize that cost, you're going to do the right thing for the planet, right? When you say, oh, I shouldn't buy that condo on Miami Beach because it's going to be in the water soon, right? It's that kind. Excellent. Okay. All right.
We fundamentally believe in the market, the free market, but only if people have information. And the investors, their directors, consumers, podcast hosts, legislators, and others.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I think we're just about out of time. So I was going to say, for our listeners, we're going to have another show, hopefully, with you, Stephen, if you'll entertain us with a little bit more of your wisdom. And for the second show, we'll talk more about what this means for you, dear listener, and what you can do in the face of all of this information. So hopefully you'll all tune into our next show right after our next episode coming up.
And so, Mariah, we'll put up links to stuff you can read about. It'll be at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you want, you can send questions to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Although we don't hand out free financial advice, so don't send any podcast questions about that. But it's podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we should be talking about. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or any modern podcast distribution application. Please ask your friends to listen to it on their application. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close this, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Stephen, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for the great work you're doing, and thanks for the invitation.
And Mariah, thanks for being here and knowing so much.
Always a pleasure.
We'll talk to you all again next week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.